The Brothers Wisp.
You're now listening to Greg. It's the Brothers Wisp. Let's take a ride through space.
Hey, everybody. This is Greg with the Brothers Wisp, number 122. It's going to be a very intimate podcast this go around. So it's just Miller and I. So we've lit the candles. We've set out the dinnerware. Are you ready, Miller?
Yeah. Yes.
Hi there. Yes. How are you? Yes. Excellent. All right. I'm trying to make this as awkward as possible so he'll feel uncomfortable the entire time.
You're getting there.
Oh, well, excellent. Mission accomplished. let's hang the banner on the aircraft carrier. All right. So let's do some of our sponsory things. We've actually got a fair number of sponsors, so let's see how fast my fast-talking self can get through this stuff. We've got our old favorites. We've got our Cambium. These guys have been supporting us for a good while. They are still running the EPMP bundle. These guys are crazy. So it is $6,000 value. You're getting it for around $2,000, 6 months of VISP.NET automated billing, RF elements, twist horns. You get 2 hours of one-on-one with a network engineer strictly discussing EPMP. You can't talk about anything else. It says that in the fine print. No, not actually. I'm pretty sure you can ask him any question. Ask him what his favorite color is. I'm sure he'd love to elaborate. But no sales pitch on that one, right? It's just you and an engineer. And you also get a CN Heat trial to go along with it. Again, that's Cambium. The link to the bundle is kind of in the show notes. So look down there for the link. Also, we have Sonar. They are a scalable, intuitive, comprehensive ISP and operational support system. You can find those guys over at sonar.software. I think they are our longest running sponsor as well. So please visit Sonar. Tell them we sent you. We've got a new one, and I'm going to click their link really quick. It is QuickBit. We did a sponsored podcast with them what feels like ages ago, but it actually went live last Thursday, I believe. Pretty sure it was last Thursday. Anyway, these guys have a killer 60 gigahertz product that they just put out not so long ago. It's indoor and outdoor kit, crazy feature set. For the price, you get API development tools, solid distance, and up to 8 clients per hub. So be sure to check out QuickBit, and that's QuickBit.com. We also have Tower Coverage. Who hasn't heard of Tower Coverage? TowerCoverage.com. Let me say that without munging it all up. TowerCoverage.com is your RF propagation system to empower your network, real-time data metrics, enable your coverage area, reaching out to your customer base, and more. The industry's best RF propagation mapping system allows website integration for custom sign-up and pre-qualification. Use this data to scientifically... Oh, I like that. I like to imagine myself wearing a lab coat with my glasses and a pocket protector when I do it. Use this data to scientifically plan network expansion and help your WISP succeed. Get a free trial today at towercoverage.com. How was that, Miller? 1 to 10, how'd I do?
I think that's a 10.
Oh, buddy. You're getting a raise.
Yes.
Excellent. So we've got the vegetables out of the way. Let's get to some of the fun stuff. We have a few new patrons. All right, let's see if I can screw it up really bad. I forgot to ask for clarification on how you say these folks' names, but it looks like Eugene DeWinar. Winar? How would you pronounce that? I'm going to say that. He is a cat out of South Africa. He's an engineer at a big-time ISP. Man, they've got connectivity all over the place. That's pretty baller. So that guy came out swinging. One of the things I have on the list is actually from him. So that's pretty cool. We also have Tim Donaldson and Michael Stelly. Pretty sure I got those right. I think those guys both had a little bit to contribute already also. So it's pretty cool. You go to patreon.com/thebrotherswisp. You throw us a couple of bones, help support the podcast. We send you a link to our invite-only Slack, and you can get in there and get wild and wacky, and there's lots of good information sharing. Again, I can't even keep up with you guys. You guys teach me too much stuff, and then there's unfortunately, there's too many new things that I run into in there, and I like add them to this imaginary list that I will someday get to, but I know I won't feasibly get to it. You guys just like talk about too much stuff. How do you keep up with all that, Miller? Do you just choose to ignore most of it?
No, I I glance over a lot of it. I do read some of it. You know, I picky in the channels that I participate in. you know. But typically I'm in the Microtech one or the Linux stuff, those channels. That's what I like, but...
Rock and roll. Anytime anybody asks about a speed test server, you always pipe up about that. Or smoke ping. Smoke ping, that is your, yeah, that's your baby.
I've done some smoke ping before, and I've done some speed tests.
You like the kind of guy that enjoys a good smoke ping every now and then.
Yeah. Proxmox. Done some Proxmox, too. You know.
All the good back.
Done a little bit
stuff.
Of everything.
Yeah, man. You're a renaissance man for sure.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, this list is kind of slim today, so you better start vamping, bud. You better start saying some stuff.
Oh,
here.
Man.
All right, here we go. So we have our very own Simon Green. He works at WireHive. I believe he's actually a partner there, part owner. But they have a podcast called WireLive, and that guy went live and discussed, I think, one of the main things they talked about. Well, I mean, they talked about a lot of stuff. But I especially like his face when his co-host got disconnected. He kind of, It's a very familiar face. I'm sure I've made it multiple times. But he was talking about, and I thought this might be near and dear to your heart. He was saying, why aren't more people talking about / excited about the new iPod, or not iPod, iPhone that they just announced? And you're a big Apple iPhone user.
I am, yeah. I've been torn whether I want to buy this one or not. Really, I was kind of waiting for USB-C to be on the iPhone before I, you know, bought another phone from Apple. They didn't deliver on that this time. You know, I have the X right now, and I've been pretty happy with it. I don't really know why I'd upgrade, except maybe the battery is starting to... I only got like 80% battery capacity now, so barely makes it through a day.
You're doing pretty... Well, did you... I mean, you used to... Like most people, I'm assuming, like with the early generations... It really was a big step up each time they put a new one out, right? So you were eager to actually upgrade. I'm assuming the upgrade is very minute nowadays, right?
I mean, unless you're gaming on your phone, I don't really know how much faster the web browsing experience could get.
Or the camera, right? Isn't that generally what they update nowadays?
The camera, yeah. I guess Apple has got three different camera lenses, and they'll do an ultra wide and stitch it all together using AI inside of the neural network chipset or whatever. But it's neat, but it's after a while it's like, how much more pixels do I need? You know, you every time they add more megapixels, you lose capacity on your phone, you take less pictures. Like, are you out of space on your phone, Greg?
What am I even using, dude?
Do you have a cell phone? It's a flip phone.
It's a cellular
phone. You got a StarTAC, don't you?
I usually use burner phones, right? So it's like...
That's like a Note 4.
No, fool. This is a Samsung Galaxy S8. So I think they have the S20 out. Now, not that it's necessarily sequential, but... and you know what's funny is this thing pulled an update maybe 6 months ago, and my battery life went up like 20%.
Wow.
I don't know precisely what changed, but... All of a sudden, my battery holds out much better. And also, how much battery life do I really need when I work from home and I have my free time at home? And then, you know, like when I'm going on vacation, I'm at home. And, you know, it's basically, I'm just here all the time. And I'm within 2 feet of a USB-C cable at any time. So it's, I don't know, man. And this thing, I don't use my phone for jack anymore. I really try and use it as little as possible unless I'm on the toilet and I'm watching YouTube. Other than that, I pretty much, it doesn't exist. Like, nobody calls me. Thankfully, I'm not suggesting folks start calling me, you know, like mad or whatever. Unless they really want to say.
Well, if you want to call them, Greg's cell phone number is.
Just give them Dave's. Give them Dave's number. Pennytone. No, but my phone does just fine. I mean, it's perfectly adequate for what I need it for, which is not much these days. So it just seems...
Yeah,
I don't know. It seems like the days of upgrading quickly are dead, huh?
WireGuard on the phone and then a remote desktop into a machine to do anything that I need to do. I don't use the Microtech app on the phone or, you know, Winbox for iOS. I very rarely use SSH on there. So
I would say maybe I would need to do something like that, except I'm always at home. So my laptop is right here and I could just...
Yeah, you don't have to.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
I don't know. You work from the office every now and then, right?
Yeah, well, I've been actually driving in fairly regularly right now. Been doing a lot of growth and I've been moving stuff around, and so definitely been driving in,
Putting
getting the commute in.
those
I can
miles in.
actually listen to some podcast, some other podcasts, so
Ah, good deal. Not just the ones you're on, huh?
yeah,
'Cause generally you
not
just
listening.
re-listen to the ones you're on.
It's like self-serving, man. I don't listen to the ones I'm on. No way.
Yeah, you do. How are you gonna improve your podcast performance if you don't listen to yourself? Oh, are you trying to say you're at the peak? This is the pinnacle. This is as good as it
Yes.
gets.
Yeah, sure.
No improvement needed. Wow, the hubris of this guy. It's pretty incredible. But yeah, so pop over to watch Simon's podcast. That guy is delightful. He's delightfully British. He's charming. He's got a cool ukulele collection in the background. You should check it out. He's a good one to watch. What else can I talk about? I've been doing some stuff with Ansible. I don't know if you know that, but I do a couple of things with automation these days. So I did a couple of new use cases. I've told you I've sort of like relegated myself to a blog post a week about this stuff. So I'm pumping it out pretty regular, which is awesome because it's actually stretching me way beyond whatever. Like, I don't know, dude, I had just stagnated for so long. Now I'm like learning so much stuff so fast. It was actually kind of overwhelming at first. I'm sort of getting my hands around
Not
it.
used to learning anymore.
Not at this pace where it's just, I mean, like breakneck. It's like I just like it's just 0 to 60 immediately, and it's just learn as fast as you can. Sometimes it's like the expectations are so high, and to be honest, I'm putting these expectations on myself. It's not anybody else, but like I'm having to rig some stuff, which I love. I love duct tape, and you know how that works. So
Yeah.
I've been doing a lot with ServiceNow. I mean, anybody who works with Microtech loves rigging stuff because
Oh
it makes
yeah,
it so easy,
I
right?
think that's a Wisp thing in general.
Very scrappy DIY MacGyver, yeah, whatever you want to call it. But like, there's this application ServiceNow. It's used by tons of big companies for like self-service IT and then like their ticket system and junk like that. And it's very capable, only pretty obtuse a lot of times on how you do this stuff. The documentation's not necessarily that straightforward on some of it. So I've been doing some integrations, and you have to kind of like fake your way around some of it. So while my demonstrations work and are accurate, you wouldn't do it like this in production, because I'm just not like a ServiceNow developer. There's like, I know exactly how you should do it. I just don't know how to do that. You know what I mean? It's like, I know the words to say, I just don't speak Portuguese, so I can't like say it that way. So I kind of duct tape my way around it, and it still works. It's accurate. I'm not like faking it.
Fake it till you make
I'm
it.
not, it's totally not faking it. It's just not doing it the right way. That's a better way of saying it. I'm not doing it in the most efficient form. So there's this one demonstration I do where I create this ticket and it calls my automation, and it does this stuff, but then it creates an incident. And so to get around like figuring out the service order that they put in, I just look and see what's the last thing that was created. Yeah, use that one. Right, so in a real production environment, there'd probably be like 20 that were created by the time you like. And so it'd be something like somebody ordering more toilet paper or something. So it's like absolutely not how you would do it in production. But
Can pick something at random is what you're saying.
yeah. If you're doing it in my closed loop environment right here, like this little safe box, then yes, it works. I just need to show folks that it can work in these fashions. I don't necessarily know the right way to make it do those things. I know they can. I was even willing to like pay somebody if they could do it, but it's just trying to find people like for very, I don't know. Some of this stuff's kind of difficult. But anyway, I got through that one. So this last use case I did was ServiceNow. Somebody can go in there and you basically say, hey, I want a new virtual machine. And you tell it what template you want it based on, like CentOS, Windows 2016, or RHEL 8.1. And then you tell it how much RAM, how much CPU, how many CPUs, all that crap. You fill that crap out, order it, it calls the automation, then the automation calls vCenter and basically just clones a template based off. It's pretty baller. And It all, it's like a Windows machine provisions in about 2 minutes, give or take. Linux machines closer to a minute and a half, somewhere in there. You know, I mean, you're giving it like IP information, everything, and it like spins it up and it's ready to go, which I think is like, I don't know, it's just to my network guy brain, that's like so bonkers. I know this is like old hat to DevOps guys and stuff like that, but I don't know. It's just like doing this kind of stuff is just super weird to me, how powerful it is once you really just start doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you doing any of that kind of stuff? Like in your Proxmox cluster, are you doing stuff based on templates and just cloning them and stuff like that?
No, not yet. No, I don't have time to get stuff that organized. We do have a developer now, and we've been having him do some custom stuff for us. So one of the automations that we are working on right now is we have FastNetMon blocking DDoS attacks, and when that happens, we get alerts through our monitoring system, you know, properties down. So one of the things we've got the dev working on right now is to, when we do ban a property, also put the alert on maintenance with notes about the DDoS attack that's happening. And then, of course, the maintenance will automatically expire. But so if FastNetMon unbans it before that maintenance time is up, it's not that big of a deal. But if it is unbanned and alerts go through again, then, you know, it could be annoying. So the main reason why we did this was because it was waking people up at night, because a lot of the gamers just getting spats in the middle of the night. So our guys were getting just constant alerts in the middle of the night.
So imagine
we use OpsGenie, which will go through your do not disturb settings and just blare, wake them up, you know. So that was something that we've been looking at trying to do, and we got the guy to write it, and turns out that not everyone's APIs actually work. And when you try to contact support for it, they don't really know how to help you with that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. If you've come and say, hey, I got this programming problem, and it's like a level one CSR, they're not going to have any clue. Mm-hmm. And they're going to just kick you back, you know, like, I don't know how to help you, go away. So it can be a problem to get API bugs fixed when you try to do this kind of stuff. So
is it the OpsGenie API you guys are having problems with?
The site 24/7 is what we use. We use that, the actual ping stuff, and then it goes to OpsGenie for the actual on-call alerts and stuff.
Back and roll.
So
what are you guys using for that automation piece? What are you using to tie all that together?
Python 3.
Okay.
Yeah, he's writing it in Python. So
why not, and this is, I mean, maybe you weren't even part of this process, I'm just curious why you guys chose to do that instead of like an automation platform.
What do you mean? Like a Zapier or something?
Oh, no, Zapier? like anything, like, I mean, Puppet, Chef, Ansible, you know, some automation platform that was designed to do automation stuff instead of custom scripts.
So I wouldn't know how that automation would do a web call, and then match the IP address of the attack with a monitored alert on Site 24's system, because we actually have to go through and look for that IP in, you know, to match it up, because we don't have any information except for an IP address to match it. So we have to like search through them in some way, and I didn't look at what our guy wrote. I don't know how the API endpoints are actually done. But basically when he was doing this, he was getting internal errors on their side of things.
I used to use Site 24/7 forever. What kind of notification are you guys using? Is it just is it sending you an email? Is it sending you like a syslog, or like what's it doing?
It's doing a web call to OpsGenie, which then triggers the alert.
Okay. Okay. So,
but we're just trying to prevent it from doing that by silencing the checker before it.
So that web call, so if it's able to make a RESTful outbound web call like that, you could have Ansible Tower, which has its own API. And that's exactly what I do with all this stuff, is I'm calling Tower's API and I'm passing in variables. And then I kick off a workflow. So I have one where it like one workflow I have like for upgrading iOS stuff is the very first thing it does is everything affected, it puts it all into maintenance mode on your monitoring server. Then the next thing it does like a backup of all the network elements, and then it upgrades them right after that. Yeah. So in this workflow, you could just have Site 24/7 call Tower. Tower would then, you know, so in that web call, you basically pass over whatever IP address is having problems. So
yeah.
So Tower would take that, and then you could have it silence your alerts. You could have it do all kinds of. I mean, you could go bonkers with that. I'm just saying, and also, if it's not a custom script, if it's like an automation platform, it's usually easier for folks like you to tweak or new guys to come in and mess with. I'm not saying reinvent the wheel if you've already done a bunch of stuff, but you can pull a lot of that in pretty easily.
Okay. I'll have to look at it. I mean, it was just easy to write a couple of web calls and find the correct, you know, parse the JSON that you get back and find the correct one to silence. It's only like two or three calls to do, but so.
Ansible, I think.
That'd be a cool thing to try.
I think Ansible has modules for OpsGenie as well, which means it can like talk over to OpsGenie. Oh no, it's PagerDuty. No, well, there's some OpsGenie stuff that's out there, but it ties in directly with PagerDuty. Anyway, I digress. Trying to sell you. I was just curious why it was just easier just to write a couple of scripts than try and learn an automation platform. Is essentially what it is, right? Yeah. I don't know, man. Maybe we should talk after this. It's pretty cool.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's see. What other one did I write this week? I wrote one last week, I think, that was it uses Ansible to generate Let's Encrypt certificates, and I hadn't done that before.
Are you doing DNS verification on them?
Exactly. Yeah, I'm doing DNS verification. So I'm using Cloudflare. I use Cloudflare DNS. Yeah. So I just first thing you have to do is create like the local keys. So you have to create two keys, one for Let's Encrypt and then one for the certificate itself. Then you make the request to Let's Encrypt and then they pass you back the token. Then you put the token in the DNS entry and then you say, hey, go ahead and complete and do the lookup. And that I put like a timeout because sometimes it could take a little bit for the DNS. And so it'll try for like 2 minutes to create it. And then after it does, it's got the certificates and then it connects to like an F5 load balancer and uploads the certificates to that guy. So in like Tower, once you have that workflow working, you just go to the schedules and you say, hey, run every 30 days. And it just takes care of that magically for you and can notify you if it fails or anything like that. I mean, you could put all that crap in there. So that was pretty cool. So I don't know, man, it's like every time I work on one of these things, I like learn so much. So like with the VMware stuff, I didn't realize how easy it was to provision via templates, like with automation. It's literally like one task. It's bonkers. And then the F5 certificate thing, that took me quite a few hoops to jump through to figure out the DNS automation piece, but you know, for the certificates and like how you actually have to do the certificates and stuff together. But I don't know, man, I did like the 80s movie Fist Pump after I got that one working. It was really get my goat for a minute there.
To yell Eureka at your desk.
Nah, dude, it was like the end of Breakfast Club on the football fields. Yeah. Just throw the fist up.
The boombox.
Yeah, for sure, man. Yeah, dude, so I was excited about that one. So it's, I don't know, dude, it's like each week, like I get to just learn a new, it's just bonkers. You know what's so funny is I'm really just now getting in front of customers, getting my chance to talk and do my thing. And it's like, I don't know, man. I feel like maybe this is how people feel like when they're training for the Olympics, right? It's like so much build up. And then you get, it's like, I put this pressure on myself where I feel like every time I step up to the plate, I have to hit a home run. And that's not a realistic expectation, right?
No, like, it's not.
Especially at first, it is such an unrealistic expectation. But the one on Thursday, I had a customer meeting on Thursday. And dude, it felt, I don't know, I just hit the zone. And it's like everything was clicking and I was making stupid jokes. I mean, I don't have any non-stupid jokes. But, you know, everything was just, it was just, it was worth it. And it was like I was surfing on top of a wave, you know, just riding it. So I just... And it's so funny when I get off the phone, like when it just nails it, I just feel like jazz. I feel like it's like look, you get a little high from it, you get a little hit. So back to my meth days, it's really great. good times. Let's see, who else? Zach. Zach's been writing some automation, dude. So he wrote, what is it? Libre NMS? He wrote a Libre NMS remote polar install. And he,
for Raspberry Pi 4s, right?
I think so. Yeah, and he's got it Ansibleized, yeah. So it's
yeah.
It's like click a button and it does the thing. That's pretty baller. That's pretty exciting. I don't use Libre NMS. Maybe I should. I've been using Zabbix, and I dislike it. I know there's plenty of lovers out there, but it's bonkers to me.
I think Alex has used some Zabbix before.
I know. He's a big proponent.
Installed it and kicked the wheels on it a long time ago, and it was, I got the same kind of impression that you get when you try an XMS or one of those other ones, that you have to build every little piece, or you have to get templates, or maybe Cacti is kind of like that a little bit too, where you gotta load in whatever you're going to be monitoring, which is one of the reasons why I liked Observium, because you just pointed at it and if it's supported it works, if it doesn't then you can as the guy, the main contributor would say, go to hell if you don't like it or whatever, you know, he's kind of controversial himself,
yeah.
But and then Libre's, I mean, that's, I run that at home, monitor my home stuff with that.
I got Zabbix working just enough for my demos, but nothing else, because yeah. It is like so counterintuitive, like none of it has like a discernible flow to it. It's like it shouldn't be this difficult, right? Like it's 2020, I should be able to just say, hey, here's a host, monitor this thing, oh, what options do I want, do these things. But it's not, it's like you've got to like first you've got to dig up the amber and find the mosquito in there, then you got to extract its DNA, right? And then you gotta mix in the frog DNA, and before you know it we have dinosaurs finding a way, and it's just, you know, it's bad.
Yeah.
And then people get eaten. It's a bad time. You're gonna have a bad time. So that analogy went off the rails as bad as the movie did. So
that tangent is way out there.
Let's talk a little bit about hardware. You're gonna be at this level pretty soon, I think. It was Eugene who sent over a link to this thing. They're starting to use these in their network in South Africa. It's the EdgeCore AS5916-54XKS. Their naming scheme is right there with MikroTik's Alphabet Soup. But looking at these things, they are pretty bonkers devices. I had honestly never heard of EdgeCore, but then again, I don't get out much. And
I've heard of them before.
All right, well, maybe I have and just had it, you know, thought it was a fever dream or something. But they are... These little guys are 1U pizza boxes. I'm sure they run pretty hot on power because they have 48 SFP plus ports, but they also double as SFP ports, right? So you can stick 1 gig optics in there too, which is cool. But it also has...
No one is buying this to put 1 gig optics in it. Greg, come on.
Well, dude, like for your monitoring or out of band, it's like, it's probably not running at 10 gig. You know, you probably want to plug in just a regular gig port. Anyway. It also has 6 QSFP28, so those are 100 gig ports. And from what I understand, yeah, this thing has insane throughput. What was it? It was like 800 gigabits per second of throughput through the box, so non-blocking line rate. It runs a myriad of operating systems. It says it's compatible with iOS XR, which to me was really weird until I realized that apparently Cisco's... that's like a legit thing that they're selling their software for third parties to actually use on their devices, which I didn't realize they were doing that. So good on them, I guess. That's neat. New to me.
It's interesting that there's no like Juno S on here.
No, they're saying Open Network Linux, Volta, IP Fusion, Infinera, Xware, Cisco IOS, Adva. I think Oni as well. I think they're saying it's preloaded with Oni. But Eugene was saying that they have like an Edge Core operating system, and that's what he's got on his, and it apparently works just fine. So,
can you load CHR on it? It's playing at x86.
I have no idea.
I don't see the chipset on it right off the top of my head.
It's a Broadcom Strata DNX
switch silicon. Yeah.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound like an x86 chip, but
He was saying I think Eugene was saying that you can get like a, I can't remember, it was a ridiculous number of routes on these things, BGP routes, so you can you can easily hold a full internet table on these things.
They're 20,
I think he said, somewhere 20, around 20 grand a box.
The Juniper EX4650 has 48 10 gig or 25 gig ports and 800 gig ports. And it's cheaper than this.
Interesting. Interesting.
So that one's got, you know, 48, 25 gig ports. So if you're running 10 gig waves right now and you want to upgrade, you can just pop one of these on one side and a CCR 2004 when they're stable on the other side, you know, an upgrade from 10 gig waves to 25 pretty easily.
Rock and roll, man.
That would be, yeah.
I think, especially that, speaking of the 2004s, I think Chad, I think he said he's like RMA'd like a handful of these things. And that last box that he was running the beta firmware and did all that stuff for, they asked if he'd RMA it so they could see it in the lab. So his last piece is gone out of production. And,
yeah,
he's moved on. So I guess they're still working towards a resolution on those things.
Yeah, I got some 4.11 version 2s, Rev 2s, and so I'll have to see how those perform.
Rock and roll. There's no discernible way on the outside you can tell whether it's a Rev 2 or not, can you?
The only thing you can really see is the serial number has a slash R2 behind it on the barcode label.
Gotcha. So you won't see it till it comes in the door.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, you can't see it from like a distributor or something like that.
It's not like they didn't put a different model number on it.
No new SKU or anything.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Well, some other news that was curious to me why it was news was that Ubiquiti has started a Ubiquiti store down in Mexico so you can buy direct. Does that speak to you in some specific way? No.
No.
I guess they're trying to cut out the distribution channels. Maybe the channels partners down there were having some problems or something.
I have not even on my radar, like, to pay attention to the Mexico market, you know, or even Canada for that much. You know, I just, U.S. is what I'm mostly concentrating on. But I mean, cool.
Well, no, I try and watch what they're doing to see if I can discern why they did a thing. You know, I guess anything they do is to try and please the shareholders, right? So maybe selling direct.
It's probably a large market that's growing fast, if I have to guess. And Ubiquiti fits into that price range. So, you know, for fast economic growth.
Gotcha. So just higher margin on their sales down there then?
Probably. Mm. Yeah.
Interesting. All right. So every now and then I like to pose kind of a thought provoking question. And I was listening to this old guy on YouTube. I'm subscribed to him. I can't remember what his channel's called, but he's like a general contractor, carpenter guy. So he's been in construction for like 45 years. And for like 25 of those, he's a general contractor. So he was talking about a lot of different things. But he was saying, you know, some of the things I wish I had done really early on. It took me a long time to get there. And one of them was, he was saying business-wise, he says, what do you want to be known for? He said, because once you establish a reputation, it's hard for you to change that reputation. So he was saying, if you get known for the guy that's going to come in at a really cheap price, you know, even if you do good or okay work, you're always going to be the guy that comes in at the cheap price. And so if you try and change that in any way, right, which you're not going to get cheaper, if you try and get more expensive, you know, that's going to affect your business or whatever. But he said what he wished he had done right off the bat was to say, have people say, wow, he's expensive, but he's worth it. And I thought that was really interesting to think about, because I think a lot of people starting out, no matter what service it is, even if it's just you working for an employer, you're probably a little reticent to really speak up for what you think you're worth, or I don't know, at least for me, negotiating money was really tough at first, and it still can be sometimes. I got these weird hangups with money, right? And that's just in my head. It doesn't exist in the real world in any way. And I just thought it was very thought-provoking for me. Have you ever thought about that kind of concept? Like, what do you want your reputation to be? And what do you think about trying to evolve your reputation? It seems like some of the big vendors, instead of evolving their reputation, they just say, screw it, let's change our name. Now we're Lumen or whatever, right?
Yeah, I think out of, like, from the vendor perspective, I think Cambium has always been expensive but good.
Yeah.
You know, that's been my take on their hardware. Is it's a little pricey, but it's good and it'll last a long time, and you won't be having a lot of problems.
Right. It's pricey for a reason, right?
Yeah. I think Bridgewave is like that too, maybe. I haven't really used a lot of Bridgewave, but I get the impression that they were always expensive but good. I don't know if that's still the case now.
What about
I want my doctor to be expensive and good.
What about you? Like, you as you as a business, or, you know, like VA Skywire, or you as a human, or like an employee, like how does that factor in?
I didn't know this was going to be an interview here.
What do you say is your greatest weakness?
Oh man, why are manhole covers round?
Oh. So it's easier for the Ninja Turtles to drop right in without clipping the corners. Yeah. Duh.
We actually ask our interviewees those questions.
Do you?
Those kinds of crazy ones, but we go for service and performance for our network, and we don't necessarily try to be the cheapest anymore. So that's what we go for: low latency, high performance, networking, and customer support. You know,
one of the things he said was you should be comfortable with having 50% of the people you know like bid on or talk to pass on you because you're a price. He's like, you got to learn to be okay with that.
Huh?
How does that? Like, just hearing that.
I'm not the sales guy.
What's the feeling that that elicits?
I'm not the sales guy. I'm kind of insulated from that perspective. We've got a really great sales guy. He's killing it, and you know, I don't think he wants to lose 50% of the things he goes after, for sure. But that's weird. Yeah,
I never thought of it like that. You know, like becoming comfortable with losing business. I mean, I've always subscribed to the concept of win fast, lose fast. That's how I have always approached every time I was in a selling position, was to try and win fast or lose fast. So I try and be as transparent as possible. And get to the outcome as quickly as possible.
Work hard, play hard.
Well, not necessarily like high pressure, just be like completely transparent with people. Like, you know, this is the price I'm at. This is really pretty close to the bottom I can go. You know, if the time you want the service is X, if you reel it back, this is how long it takes me to do this. This is how long it takes me to do that. You know, so really we need to have signed paperwork by this point. So What are the obstacles to get to that? You know, and are you comfortable? Do you have budget? You know, just things like it's like I don't want to waste their time, nor do I want them to waste mine. It's kind of what it's always been. So I want to just, you know, get to the point as quick as possible. Although I am a big believer in relationship based sales, you know, like understanding their humans and all that stuff, and try and sell to them like a human. But I don't know.
Going back to something else you mentioned, pay. That's been an interesting thing too for me, because I have gone from an employee to being a manager kind of role, and I've gone to the other side from being, you know, person going on interviews to person giving interviews and trying to select candidates for to work with us. It's very difficult to sit down with someone for an hour and get a feel for whether or not they're going to be you know, living up to your expectations that you're trying to have the employee. We have two people starting this week.
All right, congratulations.
So it's we've got to train these people and get them up to speed and everything, and you invest so much time into people, it's you don't know if it's going to work out.
Do you guys have a lot of training, like on paper sort of thing?
We use a software called Trainable, and we have a lot of stuff that's been submitted to that. We have had people documenting their whatever their job duties were. They had to do one thing a week, and so we got a good amount of stuff on Trainable. And then we have some other processes that are kind of documented, but not too much. You know, it's a growing pain. It's definitely process and procedure and accountability and all of that kind of stuff. Your business is growing fast, so
for sure, it's tough to scale, they say.
Yeah, it is. So
I suppose the human piece is probably the most difficult part of scaling. Seems like everything else is easy. It's easy to upgrade your capacity. It's easy to replace hardware.
Personnel issues and you know, trying to appease them and make them happy and not cause any other problems by doing so.
So in your managerial role, do you now have these folks come to you with their problems and you are the guy that gets to sort all that stuff out?
Not necessarily. I've got one guy that manages the field guys, and I manage him. So I'm kind of two levels removed from managing the field techs that actually go out and do our installs or fix links and do the fiber stuff and all that. So I tend to try to focus on the bigger picture stuff, not the day-to-day project management tasks these days. But yeah, I get pulled into a lot of issues.
Are you getting more comfortable in that role, you think?
I don't know. We've been about this many number of network techs for about a year and a half, maybe. So it is time to grow bigger, get some more, expand out. We're adding a local supervisor. So the guy that was managing the guys wasn't local. He was up in Northern Virginia, and it's hard to manage people when you're not present,
right?
You know, doing it over the phone or Skype or Slack calls or whatever. It doesn't work out very well. So we looking for someone local that can manage the guys, and that'll free up the other Adam to do a lot of other stuff that we need him to do and to expand his skill set. So he's gonna start getting into Proxmox and learning a lot of Linux stuff and branching out from what he's just been doing. So
can you envision the day where you're not touching the keyboard anymore? You're not turning the knobs?
I don't know, man. Probably at some point. Adam's pretty close to that. I mean, he's learned a lot in his, I think, over 6 years of employment now. Five to six years, so.
Are you looking forward to that day?
You know, to let my skill set atrophy? No, not really.
I like to think of it as letting it, putting it out to pasture. You're just letting it enjoy its twilight years, that's all.
I like to stay busy. I like to do stuff at home. I like to try different projects. We found one the other day that we just installed. If you give me a second to find the name of it, but we found it on Reddit. Someone had just posted it, and it was a network monitoring solution that used NetFlow and had some SNMP and ping capabilities built into it. And it was just a really simple looking project. So I had Adam, that was like one of the first things he tried to install and do on his own, and he got it working. So, at home I have a Proxmox server and I constantly wipe it and load stuff up on there. And I think I got two Minecraft servers on there that I play with, you know, my kid. He likes to play modded Minecraft.
So it sounds like you would keep yourself technically proficient even if you weren't doing it at work. So have you come to terms with the fact that eventually the evolution of all of our jobs is to stop turning the knobs and eventually lead the people that do? Is that sunk in?
I think it's going to be everything's going to be an Ansible module, and we won't have to do anything except for manipulate the inputs and outputs of different scripts to flow between two different modules or whatever. You know, we'll be making middleware for the rest of our lives to tie all this crap together.
I don't know. It's
that's what I think.
It's so interesting. Really talented IT guys like you, right? Whether they're network guys, server guys, I don't care where in the stack you happen to land yourself. It's so hard to separate yourself from doing the engineering, from that engineer. Do you think maybe it's that you identify part of your personality as like, I am this network engineer? So do you think it's like such a departure from who you are now to think that now I'm just the manager of engineers, that it's like hard to sort of look at yourself in that light, to think that maybe that's the direction I'm moving? Or do you just feel like you'll never fully get there?
I don't know. I don't know. We're still too small for there not to be more than one person who can answer. You know, like there's still some things that I do that I haven't let go. Those capabilities, I'll probably always maintain that for quite a while, you know. So I guess ultimately the buck stops with me on our network performance. So if that's the case, I'm always going to have my hands in there and fill in and plan.
So ultimately, but you're responsible for the network. If anything goes wrong, you have to answer for it. So if that responsibility is put on your head, you still want to maintain enough control to where you can maybe subvert some kind of pitfall or adversity.
I can't have it be 2020 looking back and being like, well, we could have done this differently. If that would have been something I would have thought of at the time, you know?
Yeah.
So I have an example I can give of that, I think. So we have a remote property. It's an MDU, and we have Microtechs out there. We have this provisioning software that we wrote, and it went a little haywire. Some of it wasn't provisioned right from when we got it. We use a Microtech branding package and replace the default config with something, little stub that just pulls a config off the local, off a web server, basically. And it wasn't working right. And so we had all these Microtechs out in the field with default configs, and of course, port one just have bases. So port one's firewalled off, so we have no way of like provisioning these things to match what the apartment is or what the stickers
are on
the box.
And port one is what you PoE power it with, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So this is exactly what we did.
So it super sucks if it gets defaulted.
So it did super suck, but we had some that were provisioned that we got into using, I think it was either Roman or Backtone or whatever. Whatever it is, you get into it. And then we made it a wireless client.
And you connect to the other stuff.
Connected to the unencrypted SSID, gotten into it, had it download the branding package, reboot and reset default config, and boom, provisioned.
Yeah.
So the guys went through the whole thing and did that. But that saved us a costly trip out. You know, that would have been like a hindsight thing, like, oh, we could have done it like this, but we thought of it and we did it, and you know, Adam executed it and we got it done. So yay, saved the day. But I was one of those, you know, things that you get, you know, like, how can we fix this, thinking outside of the box, getting it done. So
and you get a lot of satisfaction from that, right? Finding a problem, overcoming said problem.
Yeah.
It's the win, right? You want to win.
Yeah. Yes. So, yeah. So, one of the other, just kind of on a tangent, but kind of still related, Unify video servers, cameras going offline, not recording, monitoring, that kind of stuff, writing code for that. Got, it's stupid, but we wrote if X number of cameras are offline on this controller, reboot the VM software. Like, that's like the worst thing I'd ever want to do, but that's just basically what we had to do to keep Unified Video running, is to reboot it, because some part of it crashes in the back end and all the cameras go offline and it doesn't record.
So you have to
reboot them when that happens.
I pretend like I haven't written a million cron jobs that just reboot every 72 hours or something. Or reboot it on Sunday.
I could do that. I could reboot it once a week. Yeah. That would be the easier thing to do versus using the undocumented Unified Video API to count how many cameras are offline and then reboot. You know, Xavier.
So something we were talking about with the win, like, it feels good to win. When you become a manager, you have to let your employees have the win. That's like, you don't get the win anymore. I guess you sort of like vicariously get the win, but
I get a lot of the gripes too, a lot of the complaints, and a lot of the personnel issues that aren't the fun part, you know.
Yeah.
So, I don't want to go into too much of that.
For sure. I definitely don't miss the tougher parts of that, you know, like when people are, you know, just having complaints and then it's your job to, you know, suss that stuff out. And once you get to a big enough company, HR becomes the enemy. It's crazy because it's like, as soon as, that's what I always tell my guys, is like, HR is there to protect the company. They're not there to help you out. So if you go to HR, it's like, we can't work stuff out anymore. It's like, I don't know that most people know that, but when you go to HR, you kick in like these automatic mechanisms, and no longer do you and I get to work this out anymore. We have to follow this procedure, whatever this is. And it's going to be documented to the T. And whereas if you just came to me, we could probably just work something out, you know, and all parties would be happy.
It's going like going to small claims court.
Ugh, it's the nuclear option.
Stuff's gotten serious, you know.
It's terrible. Yeah, so I'm always hesitant to ever encourage anybody to, because it's gone badly. It's gone really badly. Boy, Len Levin. And a lot of it just comes down to communication. Just have to communicate, which is tough. Like, one employee will have a problem with another employee, but they won't talk to them about it. Like, it's my problem to solve now. Especially when it's like a personal gripe. It's like, oh, this is crazy. But, I mean, you know, that's how it works. It's part of being a manager. You have to deal with that stuff.
Yeah.
But it's good, man. I think you'll end up being a good manager. The more and more you take it on, you just have to own it.
Yeah.
You have to learn to
let
go. I'm
excited about the new guys starting this week. It's going to be fun having them. So
some new fish. Are they going to be kind of engineering? Are they going to stay inside with you? Or
one guy is strictly manager. He's we didn't hire him for technical abilities. He has got satellite experience, and got experience running crews and stuff. So managing guys. So we basically hired him for that. And then the other guy could very well be a manager. He was actually in the running for that. And then we offered him a tech job because he was more. He had a lot of experience with low voltage and being a like a alarm telephone, you know, kind of low voltage electrician kind of job, which is something we need.
Is that where you guys stay the busiest? So, is actually on your cabling side?
We have both cabling, like low voltage, and installation. We do both construction and fulfillment on that side, greenfield and brown. So, yeah, we do a lot of that.
So you guys stay busy on that side of the house?
Yeah.
On the blue collar?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the internet side stays busy. The TV side's getting a little strange. Just because there's a lot of streaming options and the Dish and DirecTV stuff seems to, the coaxial satellite stuff seems to be in transition of some sorts. It's not as easy to do or sell it.
I heard AT&T is kind of cannibalizing their own business sort of thing.
Yeah, they have this AT&T television thing, which we have on our site, and have been trying to push it for a while. And one of the things that we kind of scratch our heads at is if, like, we offer something like AT&T television, like, why would you go to our website to sign up for it? Why wouldn't you just go to AT&T, like Google AT&T television and then sign up on theirs? And if they do that, then how do we get any credit for that? We don't, you know. Mm-hmm. So we basically lost a bulk option or a DTH option by being the internet provider and not going coax television route. Because they just, from our perspective, it's like, why would you know, go through this site? It's, the site that we have isn't as nice, you know. It's not, they threw it together, so it's barely functional. But yeah,
well, all the margin's always been in the internet side anyway, right?
The DirecTV and Dish stuff is not as much. We do a lot of the Dish Smart Box television, where it's like I think it's a 4 or 5U box that's got 3 power supplies and a bunch of blades in it. The blades are like the full height of the box and length, and they were just like, they take the satellite signals and decrypt them and then output them as QAM right on the cable plant, so you don't even have to have cable boxes anymore.
Oh,
it just
cool.
Tunes it right on your television, like digital cable. So we do a bunch of that stuff, but those boxes are the actual content providers will like to change where the satellite signals are or something. Like, I don't know too much about this. TV guy tells me a little bit about it, but they'll change something, or the over the air channel will change, and then how it gets translated through the smart box and how it gets outputted as QAM, like, is somewhat related. So when they make a change over the air or from the satellite, like where the actual channel is, it changes on the other side. So people lose channels and they have to rescan So it's like, oh, you know, this channel's out, and it's like, well, you got to rescan, or there'll be like a dispute, like one local NBC will be pulled for some reason, mm-hmm. you know, contract dispute, and then it won't be on there, and then, you know, we'll get calls, and we're like, wait, there's nothing we can do about it because it's not us,
yeah.
you know. So that happens quite a bit with television stuff.
Do most TVs still have like that RF interface for like a coax cable, where it does all that?
You mean coax? Some of them do. So some of them, I think a lot of the times you're going to just get an over-the-air digital tuner box and with an HDMI output going to the TV, but and I don't really know if there's a lot of those coaxial inputs anymore.
All right, homie. Well, we've hit the hour, Mark. You have any words of wisdom? Are you ready to stick a fork in it?
I haven't even shown everyone my WoW stick yet.
Oh, my God. Let's see it. I like how the video blurs.
It's not what you're thinking. Oh, yeah, it looks obscene. Let me turn off the blurring real quick.
Why don't you describe it? Paint a picture with words for everybody that's just listening.
It is a electronic screwdriver.
Yeah, but what does it look
like? Precision screwdriver. It makes more sense if I hold it like this, because that's the base, and the screwdriver sticks in the base, right?
You would say, but it looks like a personal massager, maybe? Is that how you describe that?
If that's the way you want to describe it, that's your opinion. That you are entitled to it.
That is how most people would describe the appearance.
It does kind of look like that. And you know, why don't you go ahead and describe it for the people that are just listening and don't have the visual cues?
Looks like a personal massager, all black, about this, 8 inches long.
Okay.
Maybe a foot.
Yeah. Maybe a foot. Actually pull it out here. It comes in this nice, like, premium. It's like got the premium silk touch to it.
It's like an Apple product.
It's like very much like an Apple product. And it even comes in these like white bags that are premium, you know. And then this part doesn't help anymore, right?
No.
Like, what does this look like?
I like a giant pill, like a giant suppository. That's honestly what it looks like.
So this is the actual screwdriver, right? It's got the little light on it. Uh-huh. But it comes with 69 accessories.
Oh, wow.
These are like, there's 59 of these little screwdrivers. And there's like all these little bits that I don't even know where they go.
So have you actually utilized this thing?
It Torx yet? And, well, yeah, I took apart a laptop and took out the hard drive and you know, put it back. So they just kind of pull out, you know, like this.
Was it as satisfying as you had hoped using it?
Yeah. It was,
felt good?
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. And the cool thing is that this thing only costs $46.
I don't know how often I'm going to precision screw and unscrew. So
it's lithium ion and it's USB charging. Well, that's micro, cool. Not C though. So
there's a... But there's this guy, Jaiko, whatever. He's the guy who makes these razor knives. You know, the maker knife.
I have one
knife.
Of those.
Oh, I know you have one of those, ding dong.
Oh, yeah. Let me
But he
I
also
haven't lost yet.
He also made these little kinetic precision screwdrivers. So it's got like this ball bearing in it, and it's got like this fat weight towards the front of it, so you can like spin it. Kind of, it's like a fidget spinner, but a screwdriver.
Yeah.
So those looked pretty cool, but they were pretty cost prohibitive. So there's like no way I was going to pay for one, but pretty cool.
Speaking of like everyday carry kits, you know, got Anker USB-C adapters. We got your. Got that guy. Gotcha. I have to put this guy around it because if I don't, it opens up in my bag and I feel like it's going to just cut everything.
There's a little screw right there that you tighten up. That increases
yeah, I don't know where that little... Well, now that I have a precision screwdriver WoW stick, I can actually turn that
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, you can tighten up the tension on
yeah.
that thing. Fix it.
I have a... What is this thing? A nettool.io Gen 2 adapter. It's got Ethernet on one side and USB and USB micro on this side. And what this guy does is it's got Bluetooth and wireless, and you pair it with your phone, and there's an app on your phone, and it'll do basically Wireshark right on a port, and you can script stuff with the app. Automatic VLAN tagging, or tell you what VLANs you are, and all kinds of crazy stuff.
Have you used it?
Go ahead, ask. No. No. I only got it like within the last month and a half, okay. Probably 2 months, and I haven't had too much time. I did use it. You can use it as a wireless AP.
Oh, that's neat.
So when you plug it in, you get internet on it, you pair your phone with it, and you get internet over it.
I would say
so,
that looks like,
in that regard, it's,
looks like a lipstick, nice just about.
It does. It does, yeah.
Maybe a little bit larger.
Yeah, and then do you have a kit like this, Greg? Full of stuff?
No, I just have a laptop bag, okay. Chock-a-block full
like
of crap.
Like a 64 gig you know, flash drive. I got a Leatherman squirt. Scissors, got your handy Ubiquiti AP removal tool.
This is just a hammer he's holding up to the camera.
Yeah, yeah. the Microtech Wump, whatever it is. Have you used one of these before?
I have one, but I have not used it. Have you tried it?
Dude, I have used it before. It's actually pretty neat. You plug it in, it shows up as a 2.4 SSID. You connect to it. And then you go to your gateway, which is this guy, and it's a web page, and you can do terminal stuff on the web page. Doesn't give you internet access though through it, so it's not
perfect.
Not cool like that. Not perfect. And then I just got a bunch of cables, like every kind of cable you can think of, flashlights, and got the Wilson. Justin Wilson cued me in on these guys, the USB to RJ45 for Cisco.
It's all in one cable. Stuff.
Yeah.
I still use just the DB9 and then the standard Cisco console cables.
Savage.
Well, that way you can go to like some old school stuff. You need to like plug into a UPS and connect to it.
Yeah. So. Yep. And I got a Sharpie. Gotta have a Sharpie.
Yeah, I got Sharpies, pens. I've got the zip ties with the label tags hanging off of them.
I got some of those.
I've got some extra optics. So I've got some single mode, multi mode SFPs. I've got SFP Plus or two in there. I've got some GBICs in there, I think.
I've got a 10 gigabit USB-C adapter, SFP Plus adapter.
Nice.
To run speed tests off my laptop. And,
so fancy.
I got a Expo light meter, little itty bitty light meter. It's got USB charging on.
I've got a pocket multimeter cool. In mine as well that I find infinitely cool. Invaluable because you never quite know.
We were talking about cyclo alignments and multimeters and how we could graph the signal strength of a voltmeter while you turn it, and if you do it enough times you could like actually like kind of graph it on graph paper and figure out what the actual bullseye looks like when you do it. Have you done one of these cyclo alignments?
No, I haven't.
Before? They're pretty cool. Right? When you do it, it's you can the voltmeter reads between like 0 and 1, and so when you're in the neg 70s and you're sweeping left and right, mm-hmm. You'll see it, you know, start to get higher. You know, it'll go up to like neg 65 and then come back down, and the next peak will be bigger and it's like neg 50, and then the next one will be, you know, 30s, right? And then it'll do it the opposite side. So you get these peaks. And if you just graph that and it went down a degree and graph that went down a degree, you know, and just did this, you would end up just like you're printing with a dot matrix printer, the signal strength, you know, and you could see a heat map of those rings. I think that'd be very cool to do just from a nerd perspective. And we were talking about how could we actually do that with a Raspberry Pi and reading with GPIOs, the voltage, and then using a precision like screwdriver or something to actually turn the mount, you know, pulse the trigger or something. I don't know how we would do that part But that would be really cool to like design a pro like a stuff fun project and do a presentation on that or something. But who's got time for all that, you know? Like that's
You could probably do that with a microcontroller. That'd probably be pretty easy to do with like an Arduino. You could just
Arduino
sweep it and it would just keep track of all that stuff, you know? Because you could have some of those you could have some sensors in there that kind of sense directionality, and then it'll just kind of guide you with little arrows on the screen. Up, down, left, right, or get it right in the middle.
I'd imagine that with a beamforming radio, I wonder, like, quick bits or whatever, you know, like, they can scan with the elements and sort of come up with some kind of heat map, you know. I don't know. That'd be kind of neat. I think maybe that's what Microtech does when they do the 0.6 degrees up or to the left or right. You seen that before?
No.
They have little arrows on the side. So when you're aligning an LHG60, it's got arrows on the side that point up, down, left, and right.
Oh, perfect.
And they'll flash, and you know which way you should go. But if you look in the command line or in the Winbox GUI or however you want to look at the settings, it actually says like 0.6 up, 1.4 to the left. And you can try to do that, and eventually it kind of will say center, center. And that's when you're supposedly dead on, but it takes a while to get there.
Baller, man.
But.
Well, cool. Well, that was a cool inventory of your bag as well as your new screwdriver. That's what that was. It was a screwdriver.
You said you wanted me to talk some more. So.
Absolutely, man.
Be careful what you wish for.
No, man. All I know is, let's see.
I got more tools in my trunk.
Haven't seen any new... what was that stuff we used to watch? Rick and Morty? That kind of like fell off the face of the earth. What happened to that new season? It's disappeared on us.
It came out.
Wasn't it like 3 episodes or something?
No, they finished. It was like 4 or 5 episodes at the end.
4 or 5. All right. Well,
yeah, they did half a season and then they finished the other half. And, you know, it wasn't as, I don't know. People have mixed reviews on
it. Gotcha. And then you watched, Plebs. And you got super bummed when Stylex died. Which was
season 1 was great, and then they started doing the bar stuff, and it just went downhill. And now that I'm like on season 5, I'm like, I don't even want to finish this. It's not really that funny anymore. Yeah. It's like that. It's not. It was like it was The Office, but in Roman times.
Yeah, it's a fun show.
They would always be at the office, and they would always get that one guy to say something really awkward about, you know, penises or something, right when the boss would walk in, you know.
Good times.
It was good times.
Right now that's Great British Bake Off. It's the middle of the season. I'm having a great time watching that and Extra Slice. You got to get on that train.
It's not that RuPaul drag show anymore that you like.
Oh, I'm done with, like, we finished all the seasons.
Oh, so I can. Okay.
Yeah, quite literally. Ooh. There's a new one that's it's a Dutch one, but I can't get my hands on that one, so just kind of bide my time. It's dubbed over, so it's like I kind of wonder how well it's going to translate for me anyway. But also Taskmaster, a new season of that started there on Channel 4, but this is quite literally the worst season I've ever seen. Weird.
Lego Masters was actually pretty good.
Oh, Lego Masters.
We watched that with my kid. That was a bonding experience for us. Yeah. Watching Lego Masters.
My kids.
It's great. Great show. Great kids show.
My kids are all over the place right now. My 14-year-old is like so angsty and against the world and against his parents. He's rebelling against people who give him like way too much freedom. So it's kind of curious to see like how he rebels. It's almost like he's living vicariously through his friends. Like his friends, he'll tell us about all these bad experiences they're having with their parents. And then he rebels against us for the stuff that his friend's parents are doing or something. I don't know. It's like maybe we're not confining him enough. Like he needs something to push against, perhaps. I don't know. I gotta figure that one out. It's pretty annoying right now, though.
Yeah.
But such is life. You've got a lot to look forward to in about 10 years, so you can enjoy the time while you have it.
Yeah.
All right, man. Well, let's stick a fork in. I need to go eat dinner. I'm starving. And you need to go to bed, because it's 9 o'clock. What? You're so sleepy.
It's only 9:25.
All right.
The night is young.
All right. Well, thank you to our sponsors. That's going to be Cambium, Sonar, QuickBit. Again, go check out QuickBit.com. Check those cats out. I looked. They still don't have the store up. I wanna buy a pair of radios and start playing with it. And then go over to TowerCoverage.com, say hi to those guys. Also, if Miller, people want to get a hold of you out on the internet, how are they going to do that?
Best place is the Slack. If you want to get a hold of me, get on Slack. It's the easiest way.
It really is the easiest.
I'm also on Facebook, yeah. I'm always on Slack. But someone did contact me on Facebook about the QuickBait stuff and had good stuff to say. So thanks, Matt, for getting with me on that. I haven't written you back yet, but I did get it. So
yeah, I saw somebody, I think,
great stuff to say about
it. Post on the YouTube link. I think on the video link, somebody posted on that saying that they are a beta tester as well, and they've basically put that kit in place and haven't had to touch it. So another win for those guys. Just give us a way to buy your stuff quick, but come on with it. I guess if you want to get a hold of me, it's greg@gregsoul.com. Miller didn't pump his blog, but it's dynestatic.net. You need to go check
dynestatic.net.
There you go. Go check that guy out. Me, gregsoul.com, I am very regularly blogging. If you are interested in Ansible or have an interesting use case for me, definitely let me know, because I'm trying to constantly come up. So right now my new one is, I've got several new ones. I've got like a little list over here. I'm looking for InfoBlocks. I found a guy that's using InfoBlocks in his enterprise. They're going to contact me on Monday, so I got a call. I'm just trying to, it's like a lot of this stuff is I want to figure out how are people using it in their production environment so I can emulate that. And then what are their interactions with it? Like, what are you doing? It's a manual process. How can I automate that? Or like, what's sort of your workflow? How can I automate that? So make your life easier. Definitely makes my selling potential better. So I am trying to talk to as many people doing as many interesting things as possible. I put it out before on my LinkedIn, like, hey, who's doing this and that? And I never got anything, but somebody jumped in on the info block. So I was stoked about that. And I guess if you really want to contact me, probably the easiest way is the Slack, patreon.com/brotherswiss. And we'll get you the Slack invite pretty quick. Somebody signed up at 5 a.m. and they're like, hey, I haven't got my link yet. Little did they know that it's still a manual process, because we only pick up maybe one a week.
Oh,
one every 2 weeks.
You don't have an Ansible tower for that yet?
You can. That's so easy, suck it, Miller. No, I don't know that. I don't know that you can make API calls from Patreon. I don't know. I mean, if you could, that would actually be kind of cool. I could automate that, well, actually, because I've done
user. Maybe you should get a meeting account with them set up.
Anyway, thank you, Miller, for popping on. Thank you guys for listening. Questions, comments, please keep them coming, and we'll talk to you guys next time.
All right. See you.
Bye. Bye. About equipment and methodology, so sit back and start learning, lighting up the tower so people can start searching, shooting up the web and neighborhoods, net surfing. We got horrible jokes, we're loud and annoying, but we're informative facts, we're not disappointing. Just give us a listen, because fun is the mission. I'm telling you, you don't know what you are missing. Ideas and some good comedy given. If you missed the show already, don't worry, you're forgiven.